Hey everybody, it's Aldo Gandhi, and I just want to let you know really quickly that our swag shop is reopened. DeepDishTees.com is where you go, and that's Tees with T-E-E-S. Clever name, guys. They're the new home of our merchandise. You can get t-shirts, you can get caps, you can get coffee mugs, you can get hoodies, you can get all sorts of good stuff, and you'll help out the bar room with the purchase. So head over to DeepDishTees.com.
Look, I don't mean any disrespect. He just didn't play that well. Not for a guy of his caliber.
If they don't run the ball here, I'm going to vomit. I swear to God.
I don't really have any recollection of that at all, but I guess perhaps I blacked it all out.
You know, they won, but I'm going to be miserable all week because they stunk.
Some may find the following disturbing. Discretion is advised.
What's up and welcome back to Bard on Blackhawk Talk, episode number 16, presented by the Barroom Network. My name is Vinny Parisi, and I'm here with Joey Parisi. And Joseph, I have a question for you.
What's up?
What is harder to do in life?
I got you. I know.
Half-court shot in basketball or hitting a 100-mile-per-hour fastball in baseball?
I have two answers. I have the answer for me.
I knew it. You were going to say that. I couldn't agree more.
And I have the answer for the average Joe Schmo.
Yep.
The average Joe Schmo, you know, you pluck a guy off the street.
I've never played sports before.
Yeah. One of the hardest things to do is hit a 100-mile-per-hour fastball.
Yes.
Undoubtedly, it'll take him more tries to nail that than hit the half-court shot.
Yes.
For me. I'm no professional baseball player, but you give me 100. If you give me 100 pitches at 100 miles per hour, I'm getting the timing down. Eventually, I'm going to get the hang of it. If they're all fastballs, 100 mile per hour consistently in the strike zone, I'm getting the timing down and I'll get a hold of them. You give me 100 half court shots, I might make like 2, 3, 4 maybe, but like I guarantee I'd hit more than that. So that's my answer. The harder thing to do is hit the 100-mile-per-hour baseball for the average person. But someone who has a little bit of baseball background, I think, would eventually be able to get a hold of one more likely than they would be able to the half-court shot.
I could not agree anymore. You said exactly the way I was thinking. I played baseball for 15 years. Like, I wasn't great. Like, I didn't move on to play collegiate level or make it pro or single A, anything like that. But I did play. And I played on all-star teams. And, you know, I think I, out of 100 pitches, would foul off, tip, maybe even connect with one fair at least 5 or 6 times out of 100. I do. Yeah. I think I would hit 0 half-court shots out of 100. 0.
Now, another thing to note, I am not a basketball guy. It is, if you were to rank my skill level at every single sport, I'm talking every single sport. You got tennis, golf, hockey, football, baseball, basketball. Basketball is at the bottom for me. I'm so bad at it. It's not even funny. With that being said, I hit a half court shot in like less than 10 tries. So, I mean, take that to whatever side you want. To me, that is easier to learn.
If you don't have it in baseball, you're not like at this point, you'd blow 100 mile an hour past anyone.
Yeah.
Like, what's the fastest pitch you think you faced in your life?
mid to high 70s.
Yeah, I think when we were in our high school days, they were touching 80.
Maybe low 80s. I don't know.
80, yeah, mid 80s. Yeah, 100%.
Probably. I might even be able to hit 80 when I'm warmed up. I still want to give it a try. I threw, you know, cold shoulder and all. Just
you're had a, throwing 80, not hitting off of someone.
Well, yeah, I'm saying myself personally, if I believe I can hit it in the 80s, then yeah, I probably have hit off someone in the 80s.
I think I could hit an 80-mile-an-hour baseball to Pluto.
I don't know. I want to see if I can get up to 80. That's going to be my challenge upcoming in these next coming weeks, because I hit 73 at Guaranteed Rate Field. That was cold shoulder. Who knows the accuracy of that thing? I want to see if
dummy,
I
can. Dummy to Cuban sandwich and a great taste in this filling. Right.
Exactly. Belly was full, you know. We're having a good time. But
yeah. I understand. I do think that it is harder to hit the fastball. I think I could more out of 100 tries just based on my personal background. But someone who like hasn't played sports or very minimal athletic ability would be able to pick up the half court shot just a little bit quicker. They're both hard as shit.
That's a lot of talk coming from someone who I don't even think could hit me. But that's a challenge for a different day.
Buddy, I would put one on Mars off of you.
I don't know. We all know I could do it off of you. We kind of proved that.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
There was no mound. I would strike your ass out in a nice three-pitch mix.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll get that on video and share it with our viewers on Crosstown Crossout.
Well, guys, 5 minutes each for fighting!
That's on you.
That's got to be a record.
That penalty's on you.
It said both guys, 5 minutes each for fighting. You heard it. The crowd heard it.
Yeah, you and your alter ego who thinks they can hit one off me.
I kind of do have an alter ego, but...
Yeah.
That was a fair amount of baseball/basketball talk, but you know, this is a hockey show, so let's get into the hockey and period number one.
I got a question for you. Well, it's the hockey off season. We're gonna have plenty of fun stuff to talk about that's not necessarily NHL related. We'll keep this theme going. Let's say you were to put on pads, 10 breakaways. How many times am I scoring on you?
Ooh, that's a loaded question. I would probably say 6. I don't play goalie. The 4 you missed, you'd either miss the net trying to pick a corner or you would stick handle too tight. You wouldn't go 10 just because there are a couple times where you'd skate in too tight and dangle yourself into submission. So I do believe that, and I think I might be able to catch one if you try to beat my glove. I played baseball enough where I could probably snag one, I would think, I would hope. We might not look like it on the camera, you know, put on the beer belly over the years, but I played baseball for 15 years. I have athletic ability. I could make one save on you. Give me a break. And you'd miss the net a couple times.
Maybe. That's your best chance. I was just curious because – I think
I give you credit on that. You're a great player.
I would score eight or nine.
Great hockey player.
8 or 9 on you.
I'm better at baseball than you, though.
That's just wildly false.
I think I am.
We'll see. We're going to have to get this challenge going here.
That's the competitive spirit between us, though. And speaking of competitive spirit, the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Montreal Canadiens showed a fair bit of competitive spirit in the Stanley Cup final. The Tampa Bay Lightning became the Stanley Cup champions for the third time in franchise history and the second year in a row last week when they defeated the Montreal Canadiens in Game 5. What the heck happened? What is your take? We know you called it essentially perfectly. Good call there. Your thoughts on the Stanley Cup champions?
Yeah, I want you to say that again, that I called it perfectly, because a week ago today, I called it perfectly. I was so confident that they would take care of Game 5 at the Amalie Arena and win the Stanley Cup on home ice, and they did just that. This was the best team I've ever seen play. I'm not surprised one bit. No one can beat them in a playoff series. It was proven for the past 2 straight years, and the team's going to look a little bit different going into next year. So I'm not necessarily going to say the same thing going into next year, but, I mean, for that team and that group, enjoy this offseason while you have it.
And I'm going to be the one on this show to give a quick shout out to the Montreal Canadiens. We're not going to talk about them too much, a little bit towards the end of the first period with their future. But in terms of this series, I admire them, man. I'm sorry. I know they're the Bruins' number one rival. They're probably your second least favorite team in all sports, maybe first. I still think you hate the Leafs more, but I know the Yankees are right there for you. I respect the hell out of them, man. You know, it all melted for me. Anything that you think about the Canadiens, just because of they were that Cinderella team this season.
Yeah, it was a great story, but I just think it was a miracle run. I don't think they're a good.
That happens, man. You deserve credit when it does, because when that does happen, that miracle that is quote unquote often referred to when lesser teams make deep playoff runs. You beat teams that were better than you, so you played better than them when you needed to. There has to be credit doled out for that.
Here's where I'll give them credit. You know that saying, anything can happen in a 7-game series? Like, yeah. You come to the playoffs, okay, everything you played leading up to that point means nothing. Win this playoff series. I'll give them credit for that one time, and I guess this year you'd call it the semifinals, beating the Vegas Golden Knights. That's really the only thing that I'll give them credit for. They beat the Leafs, they swept the Jets, then they beat the Vegas Golden Knights, which is the biggest win for them all year long. And then the true match came, and they met their match in the Tampa Bay Lightning. So, yeah, you can say I give them credit. They beat two Canadian teams, and then they beat the Vegas Golden Knights, which that was your miracle scenario, in my opinion. I don't know. I don't necessarily think that they were as good as they appeared.
Against Vegas, they were.
Against Vegas, they were. They had that mentality, okay, let's just win this series. Everything beforehand does not matter. And they won the series. Vegas is still a better team in every way, except maybe goaltending. Carey Price is Carey Price. But
Marc-Andre Fleury won the Vezina Trophy.
I know. And Carey Price, he might have even lost the series for them. Who knows what happens if his little mishandle doesn't happen. I mean, to me, the Montreal Canadiens look better. If you look at their road as a whole, it looks better than the Montreal Canadiens actually were. I don't think they were that very good of a team.
See, I do, and I just think Tampa's that good. Because really, Tampa steamrolled through the playoffs. The only team that gave them a hard time was the Florida Panthers in round number one. And Spencer Knight is one of the best goalies in the world already. I'm saying it. I'm saying it right now. That's my take.
Yeah.
They gave him a hard time. They took him to game seven. They didn't really stand a chance in game seven. Tampa, they buckled down in that game. But then they kind of steamrolled Carolina, and they really the Islanders played them well. But when the Islanders beat them, they barely beat them. And when they beat the Islanders, they smoked them. So
that's kind of like what I said, and you kind of shit on that theory last week. But, hey, whatever.
When you look back at it, it's true.
Huh. A guy that I want to mention right now is Andre Vasilevsky. Who the hell wins every clinching game with a shutout?
Yeah, and while you bring him up, I will mention that he was the recipient of the Conn Smythe Trophy as the playoff MVP. He's the first goaltender to win the award since Jonathan Quick in 2012. Your thoughts more on Andre?
Yeah, before that it was Tim Thomas in 11. Just thought I'd throw that in there, but I would have been so mad if it wasn't Andre Vasilevsky. When after they won that cup and after, you know, they were getting ready to present the trophy, Gary Bettman was coming out. I said to you, I'm like, they better give this thing to Andre Vasilevsky. I tweeted it, and sure as shit, they did. I would have been very upset if they didn't. It was probably one of the most deserving Conn Smythe trophies where, like, I really was passionate about who they gave the trophy to. And he got it, so I was very happy.
Yeah, going into the series, it was a three-horse race for the Conn Smythe Trophy from the Lightning. It was Andre Vasilevsky, Nikita Kucherov, and Braden Point. Well, Braden Point kind of played himself out of it because he had a couple points in the first game and then didn't have a point the rest of the series. He didn't have a goal in the entire series. And he still ended with 14, which is like one of the greatest playoff performances ever in terms of goals. I think Crosby and Ovechkin are the only active players to ever reach 15 in a single playoff season, but Point fell out of it, and then it was really down to Kucherov and Vasilevsky, and when he got the shutout in the last game, it was like, you got to give it to him now. He might even fully have the reins of best goalie in the league right now. I know Marc-Andre Fleury won the Vezina Trophy, and he deserved to win it. I still stand by that. Vasilevsky came in third. Actually, he might have came in second. I don't remember the exact ballot. But either way, he's right there. He's a superstar. He's on a Hall of Fame trajectory. I know he's very young, but he is on a Hall of Fame trajectory. I mean, two cups of Vezina, a Conn Smythe trophy. Most guys don't get that in their career, and he's got it like 3 years in. So credit to him. The Lightning are awesome. There's not much more to say about that in terms of their series.
Yeah, I believe he came in second because I was mad that Grubauer came in third.
Yeah.
For the Vezina. But I completely agree that he is the best goalie in the world right now. Andrei Vasilevskiy, he is at the top of the goalie mountain right now. I don't care who won the Vezina. I don't care. I mean,
he's not going to win the Vezina trophy every year.
No. No. Just like, but he's been the most consistent. I believe, didn't he win it? Did he win the Vezina in 2018 or 2019?
I want
to say 2019. Yeah. So if he won it that year, I know he won it.
Hellebuck won it last year.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But Vasilevskiy was a nominee last year. He was a nominee this year. If he's nominated every year consistently, whether he wins it or not, he's probably the best goalie in the world.
Yeah, I mean, what did Brodeur win it? 4 times out of 100, out of 20 years? I think Wah won it 3 times. Lundqvist won it once. All guys who were like at the top of their game at some point. You don't win it every year. Every now and then one guy will like, you know, pass you in a goals against average or save percentage. If you're the second on the Vezina ballot every year, you're probably the best goalie in the league because the guys around you are rotating in and out.
Exactly. Exactly. It's all about consistency in this league, and he's been consistently the best goalie. Granted, he plays in behind probably the best team consistently in the past 3 or 4 years.
I hate that argument, though.
It helps, but no, I'm not taking away from Andrei. He is the best goalie in the world. I'm not taking it away from him, but it helps.
It helps, but in a team sport, you need help. Like, Tom Brady's the GOAT, but is he the GOAT if he never gets drafted by the Patriots? Maybe not. Is Aaron Rodgers the GOAT if they have switched places? He might be. You need – I mean, there's so much that goes into having a legendary career like that. And, you know, Tom is the GOAT. It's not even close. He goes to Tampa, and they magically win the Super Bowl. But, I mean, he knew what roster he was going to. He's not an idiot.
And American League pennant and 2 Stanley Cups.
Wherever he goes. So that's a story we could talk about real quick. I was going to ask you, how did this happen with Tampa Bay? How did they win again? Like, what was the key? The biggest key is probably Tom Brady just going to Tampa Bay.
It's all Gronk. Gronk needed another reason to party. I see pictures of him with Kucherov, and looks like the funnest time in the world.
Isn't it amazing, though, that when he was a kid living in California, the 49ers were a dynasty. There was another California team that did really well while he was living in California as a kid. Then he went to Michigan to go to school. And in that time, the Red Wings won 3 Stanley Cups. The Wolverines won a natty. And that's it, I think. And then he goes to New England and they win 6 Super Bowls. The Red Sox win 4 World Series. The Bruins and Celtics each win once. Then he goes to Tampa Bay. And in 2 years of being in Tampa Bay, going into his second year, they have 2 Stanley Cups, an AL pennant, and a Super Bowl.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy. I loved it when it was Boston, you know, 2018 World Series, 2013 World Series. I loved every second of it. And the Bruins, you know, haven't shied away. They won in 11. They made it in 13, made it in 19. But, I mean, I guess it's Tampa Bay's turn. And I don't hate it because I feel like as a Boston fan, I feel like most Boston fans are adopted Tampa Bay fans. The Tampa Bay Lightning, for some reason, I've said this to you, I'm not speaking for all the Boston fans. They probably hate them over there. But for me personally, I've always enjoyed watching the Tampa Bay Lightning play. I don't know what it is. I have Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, gear that I wear. It's just when they play the Bruins, it's different. I, for some reason, put that all aside, and I actually can't stand them. But then 2 days later, when I'm watching them play the Red Wings or something, I go back to loving them. I go back to watching Kucherov and Stamkos. One of the guys are on my fantasy team probably helping me win. So it's like I have a love for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and it just works out. They never really have to play the Bruins. They eliminated the Bruins in the playoffs. And even after that, I still like watching this team win. So Tampa Bay is like my adopted, you know, I guess you can call it bandwagon. But every Patriots fan's rooting for Tom Brady to succeed. And, I mean, the Rays, if they're already taking care of the Boston Red Sox, like, go Rays.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, it's just amazing to me that wherever Tom goes, winning follows for everyone.
Yeah.
And it's all complete coincidence. But is it a coincidence if it's 25, 30 years? Like, going back when he was a kid, the 49ers dynasty with Montana and all them?
Something in the air that he exhales just spews championships.
Well, so is outside of the funniness, what was the key for Tampa Bay? Like, what is it, the fact that they manipulated the roster within legal terms? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
100%. They might have still gotten it done, but they might not have been as dominant. I think they were a dominant hockey team. The only teams that really stood a chance are the teams that, you know, played them all year long and got to, you know, figure them out and know their system. But even still, they weren't able to get it done. And if you go into these playoffs missing one of your $9 million guys, regardless of who it is, or even if it was Braden Point, then the team is different. So who knows what happens? But I mean, that plays a huge role in their Stanley Cup. I'm not calling it illegitimate. I think it's as legitimate as any other Stanley Cup, but it definitely helped.
Yeah, I mean, you can't call it illegitimate because they did it within the rules. And nothing they did was new. Nothing they did was something they couldn't have done 5 years ago. They just were given the fortune. Just wait till they do it again next year because of Victor Hedman's surgery that he just had. People aren't even talking about that. Victor Hedman just had some serious surgery because he was playing on a torn meniscus the entire Stanley Cup final. Watch him be ready right in time for playoffs, baby.
I think he'll be ready like for the regular season, so they're going to have to figure it out before then. But
maybe, and that leads me to my next. What's next for the Lightning?
Oh, busy, busy, busy with heavy decision-making offseason. Do they – I mean, who knows if they decide to – move a guy with a big hit like Steven Stamkos, Victor Hedman, Braden Point only has 1 year left as a restricted free agent. So honestly, who knows? They're probably going to – I'd be shocked if they don't do whatever they can to get rid of Tyler Johnson, whether it be making a deal with Seattle, because that's $5 million off the books, and every little bit chunk helps. They have a few restricted free, or unrestricted free agents that are, you know, hitting the free agent market probably. So they're going to free up space, but they're going to have to make a move as well. So it'll be a busy offseason. I do think that they will keep, you know, the big names like Vasilevsky, he'll stay. I do think Hedman will recover and stay. And I think Kucherov will stay. Not to say Steven Stamkos might be moved. Who knows? But if there's a big name to be moved, it's Steven Stamkos for me.
I legitimately believe that there's a chance Stamkos is gone.
Yeah.
Because I would keep Braden Point. I would pay him $10 million and keep him. Nikita Kucherov, he's awesome. He's one of the best six or seven best players in the league. Depending on the year, he could be the best player in the league. We've seen it time and time again. The goalie's staying. Victor Hedman's staying. Nobody's worried about that. I believe Ryan McDonagh is a key piece that will be kept around. Tyler Johnson scored a big goal in that game five, and he's been a warrior for them. There was a point where he was one of their top players. He could be gone.
Yeah, I don't see. Yeah, it was a big goal or not. I don't see $5 million for the next 3 years for his.
Yeah, no. Andre Palat is there. He's a nice depth piece. Blake Coleman and Barkley Goodrow are probably gone. They're free agents. They're going to go get paid. Blake Coleman's going to go play for the Dallas Stars. You heard it here first. I don't know about Barkley Goodrow. Could he go back to the Sharks? The Avalanche seem like a fit for him. I could see him going to a team like the Boston Bruins. He would fit well on their third line. There are so many options for him. I just think the Lightning, they're going to figure it out, though, because they draft and develop well. They got guys like Braden Point who come out of nowhere. As long as they don't make dumb trades like the most recent dynasty in the NHL, they can very well keep this going. So.
Yeah, I'm just looking at – I thought Pat Maroon was a free agent, but he's back with the squad next year. I don't know if that's a recent deal.
Do they try and move him?
No, he's only a $900,000 cap hit. Why would they try to move him?
Yeah, that'd be dumb. Credit to Maroon, too. That is his third straight Stanley Cup final after winning it with the Blues in 2019 and then the Lightning in 2020 and 2021. What a run for him.
Yeah, and who – like if – if they're able to get it done next year, three, not only would it be our first time seeing a three-peat since like the 80s, right? The Islanders would probably be the last time there was a three-peat.
Yeah, Maroon's the only active player to win three in a row.
Yeah, so
he's has three: Keith, Taves, Kane,
Crosby,
Malkin, Letang.
Chris Kunitz has.
He's out.
You're saying in the active?
Yeah.
Oh,
all time. There's plenty.
Oh, you didn't say active.
Yeah, I did.
No, you didn't.
Hit the film.
He did not say active.
I said active.
No, you didn't. But anyway, yeah.
There's only like 8 or 9. And the fact that it's that many.
Oh, it's yeah, it's a guy like Pat Maroon, too. Like, you think of all those names, you got like big name guys, and then there's Pat Maroon.
Yeah. Jamerson, he's active, but he might retire.
Yeah.
So the Lightning were fun. I enjoyed the hell out of watching them. We're going to be talking about them a lot, I think, throughout the summer, just because they're going to be one of the more active teams in terms of departures. And it'll be interesting to see what type of additions they make. They draft well. So that draft is coming up soon. I think no team in the league is more excited for the Seattle Kraken expansion draft 1 week from today than them, which, how exciting that the Seattle Kraken expansion draft happens to land on a Wednesday.
I know. For those,
I mean, it's 1 week from today.
It's the 21st. And
it's one week from today.
I'm hoping
a little preview real quick. Next week, if you're watching, you got to know that this show is going to be the Seattle Kraken show.
I'm hoping that, you know, things line up and I'm able to do that show with you. But yeah, we're definitely going to be looking at the Seattle Kraken team and the list that they submit. So I'm excited for it. And I can't wait to see all the I don't know if it'll be public, but teams have to submit their list by Saturday, July 17th. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, who does what.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. The Kraken getting going, I think, is exciting for the NHL, and no team might take advantage of it more than the Lightning.
Yeah, especially with some of those big – yeah, I would be shocked if Tyler Johnson is in a Seattle Kraken. That's what I'll say. And we're going to look into that more, but that's what I think is going to happen. Tyler Johnson to the Seattle Kraken for the Lightning.
I couldn't agree more. So, Maroon?
No. He actually has a – I was just looking at it. He has a modified no move clause or no trade clause, which
is – yeah. Some guys are waiving that, though. Like, I saw today that Jeff Skinner on the Buffalo Sabres has agreed to waive his no move clause for the purpose of the Seattle expansion. But we'll get into all this next week on the Seattle Kraken show. I'm excited to probably, for the most part, dedicate all three periods to different variations of the expansion draft.
Yeah. Yeah. And
something big happens, like what we're going to talk about after this upcoming commercial break. I have a take.
What's your take?
People aren't going to like it. I don't think Javier Baez is that good of a baseball player. I don't. He's got like a 280 on base percentage. That doesn't play in today's league. You've all seen Moneyball. You have to get on base. It's not all about just hitting a home run. Javier Baez needs to be a better hitter all the time, not just when they're getting killed. So I'm out on him. If I'm the Cubs, I'm trading him right now. He's not worth $300 million. I'm sorry. Not with a 280 on base percentage. I would rather Tim Anderson as my shortstop every day of the week.
White Sox fans to this day wanted AJ Hinch. Tony La Russa haters that would rather have a guy to fix the playoffs and World Series in season than Tony La Russa. And I have a huge problem with that. I do. Don't go preaching about, okay, he drank and this and that, and he shouldn't have done this, he shouldn't have done that. You guys wanted AJ Hinch, and you're going to talk to me about Tony La Russa.
It's the Mikey Bet Show, the Mikey Bet Show. Do you know the Mikey Bet Show?
Baseball at the Barroom. On Monday nights, get ready for the Friendly Confines Extra Innings. It's 30 minutes, it's clever, it's concise, and it's all Cubs coverage. That's followed by a killer White Sox show, South Burbs Hitmen. Then on Thursday afternoon, it's Cubs and Sox opinions and analysis with Crosstown Crosstalk. Baseball at the Barroom. Join us live and or on demand.
and we would like to send it over to period number two. I wanted to see if I can trick you into thinking I was frozen, but it didn't work.
It absolutely did not work. What do you think I am? Stupid?
Duncan Keith has announced his retirement from the National Hockey League. Just kidding. He didn't actually do that. Duncan Keith wanted to be traded. He wanted to go to either the Pacific Northwest or Western Canada. Well, he got his wish. He is being sent to the Edmonton Oilers, and in exchange, the Chicago Blackhawks received a draft pick and Caleb Jones. First, before we get into the messy details of the trade, which was actually a great trade for the Blackhawks, your thoughts on Duncan Keith's tenure with the hometown squad?
Yeah, remarkable. Number, rafters, the whole nine yards, Hall of Fame. I could see how you made that little brain fart and said that he retired. You know, we saw a couple.
It wasn't a brain fart.
What do you mean? You meant to say that?
Yeah, I was joking.
Yeah, I don't know. Easy to play that off. Anyway, it kind of feels like he retired, does it not?
No.
To me, it does.
We joke.
No, well, to me, it does actually feel like he retired. Like, this dude, it is going to be hard to see him in another jersey, and it's going to take getting used to. We'll see how long, you know, he plays before he announces his retirement, because he's definitely on that, you know, downward trajectory. And, but I mean, there's not enough things to say about his tenure with the Chicago Blackhawks. You think of number two in red, and there's only one number and one person that you can think of, and it's Duncan Keith. You know, the three Stanley Cups, he's got his Conn Smythe in 15, he's won the Norris Trophy, Olympic gold playing with Brent Seabrook. Duncan Keith, you know, our time watching hockey and the prime of us becoming fans of the sport, was a pillar of defensemen. And, you know, it's sad to see him leave Chicago.
Yeah, I agree. So there's three parties involved with this trade: the Chicago Blackhawks, the Edmonton Oilers, and Duncan Keith himself. Two of those three parties should be extremely excited: Duncan Keith and the Chicago Blackhawks. Yeah, it's sad. Now, before we get into that, three-time Stanley Cup champion, two-time Norris Trophy winner, one-time Conn Smythe Trophy recipient as the most valuable player of the playoffs, Olympic gold medal, and a basic lock to be in the Hall of Fame and other future recognition from the organization, like a retired number, Ring of Honor, whatever it is the Blackhawks decide to do with the dynasty. He's the best defenseman in the history of the Chicago Blackhawks. I truly mean that. Some people are going to push back on me. They're going to bring up, you know, other defensemen that have played for the team throughout the years. Chris Chelios comes to mind. There's Doug Wilson. There are some really, really good ones. Really, really good ones. Now, Duncan Keith is the guy. No one else has the resume that he has. Some guys put up some more points, but points are not everything. Winning is everything. And Duncan Keith did what needed to be done as a defenseman to be a multi-time champion. I believe if he wanted to have an 80-point season, he could have. He didn't. That wasn't his game. And the Blackhawks were wildly successful because of it. And from that point of view, it's tough to see him leave town.
Yeah, it is going to be very tough. But I want to talk about that third party who I think fucked up. You said all those things, and it was all in past tense. He did those things. You just gave up a prospect and a draft pick for Duncan Keith, who isn't that anymore. Let's put all the good behind us. Duncan Keith right now is, to me, a mediocre defenseman that you just brought to your young team that, you know, you're trying to build around Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. And what are you doing getting Duncan Keith?
Duncan Keith turns 38 on Friday.
They better hope Caleb Jones doesn't turn into anything, and they better hope this draft pick is a bust, because, like, I feel bad for Edmonton fans. This organization is just, I don't understand it. I do not understand it one bit. Every Blackhawks fan, yeah, you can be sad that Duncan Keith is gone, his time in Chicago is done, but you got to be happy that you were able to get something for him at 37 years old. Come on now.
About to be 38 in 2 days.
Yeah. Like, what a trade for the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah. Now, Caleb Jones, he might not be Keith, even right now. But you're getting him his cap hit, which is much significantly less than Keith's cap hit. You're getting that third round pick, although conditional. And he is the younger brother of Seth Jones, who the Blackhawks have been in rumors for acquiring this summer. I couldn't think of the word. So I just think the fact that they got his brother hasn't always worked out for Chicago teams, bringing over brothers or brother-in-laws or best friends of their wives, looking at you, Manny Machado. But, I mean, the kid can skate, as you could see in this clip of his first career National Hockey League goal. He can join the rush if needed. He's not his brother, Seth, but he's a very good player. And his ceiling isn't, you know, through the roof, but he could be on the Hawks' bottom pair. And Keith was trending towards being a bottom pair defenseman at 38 years old. He still might be a top four because he's Duncan Keith, but you get the third round pick. You might have about an equal level player in Jones versus Keith, and we'll see if it allows them to make a push for Seth Jones. I'm a fan of the trade. I think Stan Bowman did a great job in a long list of horrible jobs, but you give credit where it's due. It was a great trade.
It was a phenomenal trade. I'll go as far as say that. It's hard to get a to get something, well, let alone, you know, a prospect who we don't even know about fully yet, and a draft pick for someone who's clearly on the decline and who knows can retire at any moment. I think it was a great move, and I do think it opens up that door for Seth Jones. And I know that Columbus is going to probably deal Patrick Laine. So I'm interested in your thoughts. What about Patrick Laine being involved in a trade with Seth Jones to the Chicago Blackhawks, you know, for both of those guys to come here? And then Laine would have to sign. I think there could be something there, but I would love that.
I would hate it.
Why would you hate it?
Patrick Laine's meh.
He's not meh.
I've got plenty of meh players.
If Patrick Laine were to play with Patrick Kane, he's looking at
up more goals.
What?
They would probably just give up more goals.
No. Patrick Laine has the capability to be a 40 goal scorer in this league. And
I'm tired of people saying that.
If you're out on him already, then yeah, I mean, Seth Jones, I think, is coming here. That's my opinion. I'll say it now before it happens, so I look smart if it does. Seth Jones is going to be a Chicago Blackhawk.
Are you going to be stupid if it doesn't?
No.
Yeah, well, figures.
No. I'm pretty confident. I'm very confident, yeah.
Why?
Because it just makes sense. I was saying that they look for a guy like Seth Jones even before this trade. They just got his little brother. And he's only a $5.4 million cap hit.
For one more year.
Then
he might want eight.
Let's see what he can do with 1 year. This is a big year for Seth Jones. If he stinks, he ain't getting any. He's not sniffing seven.
Yeah, but if he stinks, that means you probably traded Kirby Dach in a first for a defenseman who leaves.
Or you get the rights to Patrick Laine as well, someone who does not want to re-sign in Columbus.
Yeah, but like I said, I'd rather have Dach than Laine. And if they're saying, like, there are some reports out there about what Columbus wants, DeBrincat, like, no. For Jones, no.
Yeah, no.
Like, Jones is a good player. Don't get me wrong.
He is. But
I think analytics community despised him this season.
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of people look at Seth Jones, I guess, a little differently than I do. I'm shocked he even makes 5.4. I mean, that I'm a Bruins fan. We just locked up Brandon Carlo for 4.1, but I would say around that 4 million area for Seth Jones.
Are you out of your mind?
I would rather Brandon Carlo on my team than Seth Jones.
Maybe me too, but for different reasons, not because of pure skill. Seth Jones is worlds better than Brandon Carlo.
Nah, I don't think so.
You would trade Brandon Carlo for Seth Jones one. You might not because you're
I would not. Brandon Carlo, is way better defenseman than Seth Jones.
You think if I ran a poll on Twitter saying Seth Jones, Brandon Carlo would get more votes?
No.
Okay.
People are dumb. No one can. Who do you think is better defensively?
Probably Carlo.
Okay. That's what I like in my
defense. Who do I think is better two-way, which is my favorite kind of defenseman? Duncan Keith, if you will. Who is better offensively, Duncan Keith or Brent Seabrook?
I think there's a bigger gap between Carlo and Jones's defensive ability and shutdown of ability than there is in Jones's and Carlo's offensive ability.
What planet am I on?
I think Zach Werenski's a better offensive defenseman.
He is, but that's not – I'm not talking about Zach Werenski. Who the fuck brought up Zach Werenski?
Because he's with Jones.
Jones will score 12 goals a season. Brandon Carlo might have 12 points a season.
That's pushing it. I don't know.
Well, guys, 5 minutes each for fighting!
You said 7 mil. The reason I brought that up, 7 mil is way too high for Seth Jones. If he asked for 7 mil, I would tell him to take a hike.
No, he's going to get probably 8 or 9.
That's crazy. He's not worth it.
I'm not saying he's worth that either. I just know what Seth Jones's market is and what people believe of him. The analytics community hates him. You won't see a team like Tampa Bay or Carolina pay him that much because those teams are just so analytically driven and they're the two best teams in the league.
So maybe I'm not going crazy. If the two best teams in the league agree with the way I think, I don't think Seth Jones is worth
it. You're not looking at it from an analytical point of view. You don't care about his Corsi for, his expected goals for.
I guess the analytical point of view is matching what I watch. Because when I watch Seth Jones play, there's more like that I like, okay, there's more that tells me he's not a $7 million player and that he is a high four, low $5 million player.
Do you think Seth Jones is a number one defenseman?
Depends on the team.
The Hawks.
Yes, if he came to the Hawks, he would be the best defenseman.
Do you think Brandon Carlo is a number one defenseman?
Depends on the team.
The Hawks.
Yes. If Charlie McAvoy got hurt tomorrow and had to miss all next season, Brandon Carlo is the best defenseman. He is the number one guy. They give him the A if anyone else gets hurt for the Bruins. And that's a very defensively deep team.
All right. And I think the reason we're having this conversation is because you brought up the Bruins giving him that money. The Bruins get everyone cheap. Don't act like they got Brandon Carlo for market value. He'd make 6 or 7 on the open market.
So you obviously don't disagree that Brandon Carlo is like comparable with Seth Jones, because I think he's better.
I think Seth Jones is a better two-way defenseman. Brandon Carlo's offense is limited, but his defense is outstanding, which I take more stock in than the average person. So, yes, I think Brandon Carlo's just as valuable in my brain. But you're saying because the Bruins only gave Carlo four, whatever you said, that means Jones can't get 9? That the Bruins are just cheap bastards who always get their way. They have Pastrnak signed for 6. Pastrnak might make 11 with another team. He might literally double his salary if he were to go to another team. The Bruins are smart. Don Sweeney is a great GM. I mean, come on, man.
So the point of the matter is I can't see any team paying Seth Jones $7 million.
Yeah, because that's not enough.
No, that's crazy. That is crazy.
I'm not saying
some of the best
Go ahead.
Some of the best players, like put up 100-point players, are making like what, $3 million more than that? You think he's only $3 million less than some of the best players in the entire world?
No, I just know what a defenseman like him is going to get on the open market. Look at Drew Doughty. Look at Erik Karlsson. Look at Brent Burns. Shea Weber. All those guys got paid, man.
Yeah,
those
I don't look at it. You just top 20
D's. Is Seth Jones a top 20 defenseman?
Top 20? Yeah. Maybe.
That's my point. Those guys get 7, 8, 9 sometimes.
You just named players who are, you know, elite defensemen for us. Like, I don't look at Seth Jones as one of those guys.
I think he can be, and he has been. 2020-21 was a low point for him. The Blue Jackets were bad. He was amazing in the bubble. Amazing in the bubble. 30 minutes a game. I mean, they beat the Leafs. Everyone beats the Leafs in the playoffs. But, I mean, that game that Tampa and Columbus had that went like 5 overtimes, he had like 60 minutes of ice time. He's a horse.
Yeah, that I'll admit. Like,
I think Seth Jones is a very good defenseman.
I do too. I don't care
that the analytics community, and I like analytics. I'm an analytics guy. I go by them a good amount, but for some reason, I just can't bring myself to talk down on Seth Jones after what I've seen in his career.
I know. I'm not talking down on him either.
Faster, he's kind of mean. He's perfect for Werenski. I can't think of who the Hawks. Maybe he could help save Boqvist, who I think stinks. But, I mean, I don't know.
Maybe. Maybe he can prove me wrong. I think he is a phenomenal defenseman. I want the Blackhawks to get him. I think he would help this team in more ways than you know. But after this year, I'm not saying to pay him $7 million. I mean, it's a big year for him, in my opinion.
It sure is. I'm actually looking up. I want to know his highest Norris Trophy finish in his NHL career. But I have so many. When we do the show, I have so many things open. So this year, he did not get a single Norris Trophy vote. And that's just because he simply wasn't as good this year as he normally is. He had 5 goals and 23 assists for 28 points in 56 games. So not quite what we're used to seeing from him. But in 2020, he came in 14th. The year before that, 9th. He came in 4th for the Norris Trophy in 2018 and 18th in 2017. So for 4 of the last 5 years, he received multiple Norris Trophy nods. So, I mean, dude, he's great.
I never said he wasn't great.
Well, one thing we could agree on is if he came to the Hawks, he would probably be their first, second, and third best defenseman.
Yeah, by far. It wouldn't even be close.
Ian Mitchell is, I think, very highly of Ian Mitchell. I like Bodan. We'll see what happens with Calvin DeHaan in the expansion draft and all that. Connor Murphy, when he's healthy, which is a big when if he's healthy, is very good. Seth Jones might make them like feel like a playoff team at the beginning of the season before the bottom falls out. That's just my prediction if he were to come. I mean, we would obviously talk about that more. But you think adding Caleb gives it a real possibility?
I even thought it was a possibility before that. And
so did I, but it's always one of those things, like when a superstar like that is in trade rumors, it's like, yeah, I'll kind of believe it when I see it, and then it happens, and it's like, whoa.
While we're talking about the Blackhawks, I know you wanted to talk about this in period 3, but do you want to mention maybe a potential goalie that the Blackhawks can get while we're talking about the Blackhawks?
Yeah, I did have it written down for period number 3, but
I feel like talking about the Blackhawks, this is a good time talking about their defense and next year. And I think if they were to get this guy that we're both thinking of, I mean, it totally changes everything.
Yeah. So a rumor came out from Scott Powers of The Athletic last week that Marc-Andre Fleury of the Vegas Golden Knights is someone that the Blackhawks are interested in acquiring. Now, Robin Lehner was there with the Hawks last season, and then they traded him to Vegas, and now they had probably one of the best 1-2 punches in the league. But they have a hard time spending $11 million on 2 goalies, as any team would. And now one of them is going to get traded, more than likely. And if I remember correctly, Vegas is exempt from the Seattle Kraken expansion draft, so it's not like one of them is going there. But they're going to try and trade one of them, it sounds like. And they're both available, but only one is available. And the Hawks seem interested in Fleury. What do you think of that?
I mean, make it happen. Marc-Andre Fleury in Chicago? Come on now. Send back Malcolm Subban. The only time I've seen this guy play good is in Vegas. Why wouldn't he want to go play there? Why wouldn't he want to make that happen? If you're Vegas, like, have a Leonard-Subban tandem. It's going to work out for you because, you know, Fleury and Subban worked out. Robin Leonard is great for Vegas. He's phenomenal. He shared the net with Marc-Andre Fleury all season long, and then come playoff time, they kind of, you know, did a little flop and back and forth thing. It was mainly Fleury's, though. But, I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury to the Chicago Blackhawks, like, that just fixed your goalie problem. Give a guy someone Kevin Lankinen can look up to and learn from. He's such a young goaltender. So, I mean, I think that's the move the Blackhawks have to do. You got to get a veteran goalie like that who's still really, really good.
I think you nailed it with the Lankinen thing. Because he slipped a little bit, but not to the point where, like, you're worried.
No, I'm not worried about him, but, I mean, it would help.
Average down the stretch, and the team is bad. They were 31st in the league in scoring chances against. So, like, every goalie Carey Price or Vasilevsky would have lesser numbers on that team.
Mm-hmm.
So if they would make a good goalie tandem, I wouldn't give up too much for him, though. That's my only thing. He is on the older side. He's almost done. So you can't give up too much for a guy like Fleury. But when was the last time the Hawks had the reigning Vezina Trophy winner on their team?
Has Corey Crawford ever won a Vezina? I don't think
so. No. And Robin Leonard, I think, came in second or third the year before coming to Chicago with the Islanders. But, I mean, you had a guy like Fleury and your goaltending's looking pretty good. I still think the Hawks are going to have a very tough time competing in the Central Division when it goes back to normal, which we should find out the schedule. I want to say it's coming out the 22nd, the day after the Seattle Kraken expansion draft.
I saw a thing, the Seattle Kraken are playing their first game September 26th versus the Vancouver Canucks.
That would have to be a preseason game.
That's what I saw, but I don't know if it is. I'm starting to see other things, and I don't think that that's a preseason game.
I don't see how the regular season could – no, Gary Bettman said it will be in the teens of October.
Maybe it is a preseason game. If it's a preseason game, then who the fuck cares?
hockey fans who want to watch Seattle?
Yeah, I mean, do you remember whose Vegas first preseason game was? No. I
have no idea.
Exactly. No one gives a shit.
Do you remember their first real game?
Dallas Stars.
No.
Yes. The first home game was the Dallas Stars.
They played – no.
Yes.
No. It was the Arizona Coyotes. You're wrong.
The first home game was the Dallas Stars.
Nope. They played – the night they honored, I'm willing to bet you. I could be wrong. I am mush. Joey's looking it up live on camera. Not like we're doing a podcast or anything over here. The last Blackhawks goalie to win the Vezina Trophy was Ed Belfour in 1993. So if Marc-Andre Fleury came to the Hawks, he'd be the first goalie since Ed Belfour to win the Vezina Trophy the year prior to playing for the Blackhawks, obviously. Well, do you find anything on our Vegas Golden Knights?
Oh, I will.
When Seattle comes in, it's going to be a lot of fun. The expansion draft next week. I can't say enough about Duncan Keith's time with the Blackhawks, though, real quick before we move on over to the rest of the NHL news. He's smiling because he's wrong. He'd like to move on to the next topic. Anyone help Joey move on to the next topic, because he realized that the Vegas Golden Knights' first ever home game was when they honored the Vegas Strong Shooting, and it was against the Arizona Coyotes. And if I remember correctly, they won the game 4-1.
Well, what a drop. Welcome to period number 3, where we're talking.
How you lead something?
Where we're talking NHL.
Did they win the game 4-1?
I don't know, and I don't care.
They won the game 4-1.
I don't have the score. It was a home at home with the Arizona Coyotes. There was something that they played Dallas for. It might have been the
preseason.
No, it was preseason. It might have been the 2018 home opener. Because I remember wanting to watch Vegas' first game. It might have been a home opener versus Dallas in Vegas.
Did the first ever 3-on-3 involve the Stars with the Leafs?
I don't know.
I don't remember. I know the Leafs were.
It took us that long to remember the Knights' first ever game.
I remembered it right away, actually.
Who remembers about the Kraken's first preseason? Who cares about the Kraken's first preseason game? That's what I'm saying. Like, why were they making a big deal about their first game being September 26th against Vancouver Canucks if it's a preseason game? Who gives a shit?
Me.
Yeah, kind of like you remember the Vegas Golden Knights' first ever preseason game.
At least I remember the first Golden Knights regular season game and the score, but you won't tell me the score.
I don't know the score. It's Wikipedia. You probably just edited this 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, totally. Around the NHL, since Joey so rapidly sent us to period number 3 because he was wrong, Victor Arvidsson traded to the Los Angeles Kings. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a good trade for the Kings. Couple sad faces. I think it was Ryan Johansson posted a sad face on his Instagram story or something. That's something I saw. He was not happy with the trade. It's, some of these players are great friends and developed quite the relationship playing with a guy for so many years, and Victor Arvidsson's off to LA. So I think it's a good trade for the Kings. I love where they're headed. Quinton Byfield, I'm very excited to see him develop. And Victor Arvidsson's a good goal scorer. So,
yeah, and when Arvidsson scores a goal, it looks like it's the first goal he ever scored.
He's electric, yeah.
He's an electric player. I like seeing him go over to LA. It seems like it might have been an expansion draft type trade for Nashville. Try to get assets for guys they can't protect. I think they're going to go the eight skater route, I think.
Really?
I don't know. You can either do 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and a goalie, or 8 skaters and a goalie. And I have a feeling Nashville's going to protect. Obviously, they want to protect Ellis, Ekholm, and Josi. And then I think they're going to want to pick one of their other 3 defensemen that they really like. So that leaves some forwards to be left unprotected. And, you know, there are some good ones. So they started trading them off. And they're not done.
I don't know. I'm looking at their team right now. I think there's no reason for them to go the 8-skater route.
We will see on Saturday.
Their defensemen, they protect Josi, Ellis, and Ekholm. And then after that, it's Matthew Benning, David Ferrant, Eric Gabranson, who's a UFA, Ben Harper, and Dante Fabro.
I do think Colorado's going to go 8 skaters, too.
They have a better chance than Nashville, but looking at Nashville's defense, there's no reason for them to waste a pick on protecting Matthew Benning.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Maybe they will go 7-3-1.
Yeah.
But we know the 3 defensemen that they're for sure protecting.
Yeah, those 3 I just named.
And speaking of Nashville, their longtime franchise, face of the franchise, I would even say, goalie Pekka Rinne has announced his retirement from the NHL. I know he holds a special place in your heart. Thoughts on Rinne?
Yeah, he right under Tuukka Rask, you know, Team Finland, probably the best Finnish goalie. Maybe the best Finnish goalie at this point in time, you know, all said and done. Tuukka, maybe when he retires, might be a different story, or maybe even now. But Pekka Rinne is an all-time great goalie, and he represented his country every chance he got to play, whether it be the Olympics, the World Cup of Hockey. When I first started becoming a fan of hockey, like, he was the goalie in the league. You know, it was him, Lundqvist, Jonathan Quick was up there right when we started watching. And those guys were elite. He won the Vezina twice. Did he win it?
I want to say just once.
Just once?
He's a Hall of Famer.
One of the players where if I can hand them a Stanley Cup, it would be him. He wasn't able to get it done in 2017. 17 versus the Pittsburgh Penguins, but that was the closest he's ever gotten. Kind of like Henrik Lundqvist, you know, just an all-time great goalie who never was able to win the Cup. And he had a phenomenal career and probably one of my earliest favorite players. So congrats to him on a phenomenal career and in what my opinion is a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah, enough nice things can't be said about Pekka Rinne. I enjoyed watching him play for all these years. All these guys who were like in the middle of their prime when we first started coming around the sport in the late 2010s, early 2010s, they're starting to veer off into the sunset, and only the ones who were like super duper young at that point in time are kind of still kicking it, like Crosby and Malkin and Kane and Taves. So seeing Rinne leave the league, it opens the door for Saros. You know, we wish him well in Nashville. But that Predators team that was so dominant in the late 2010s, as we mentioned, when they lost to the Pittsburgh Penguins in the Stanley Cup Final, they're starting to slowly but surely break off, and Nashville's got some work to do.
Yeah, they're definitely in good hands back there with UC Saros. It was kind of like a perfect passing of the torch. You know, a young Finnish goalie in UC Saros who looked up to Pekka Rinne and looked at him as his mentor, and UC Saros won it over him. Like, he was the number one goalie this past year for the Nashville Predators, which is something we've never been able to say in our entire time watching hockey, that it wasn't Pekka Rinne. So Pekka Rinne announced his retirement, and it's just a perfect passing of the torch. I think they're in good hands. UC Saros is the future of that team, and I'm hoping they can build something for him.
Absolutely. Now, a player that used to play for the Nashville Predators, of course, Ryan Suter.
That's a good segue.
Just came out that Minnesota Wild have decided to buy out the entire contract remaining of both Ryan Suter and Zach Parise. Before I go, I'd like to get your thoughts on that duo. What do you remember about the day they signed on July 4th, 2012? Probably one of the bigger days in NHL history. It borderline caused a lockout. I'd like to know your thoughts on their tenure with the Wild. You know, give it to me.
Yeah. So these buyout situations are hard. So before I get into that, it's weird. It's kind of weird that, you know, such, I guess, a young age for me of watching hockey and becoming a real hardcore fan of the sport, you got these two guys who both signed very long-term together on the same day, at the same time, probably in the same room. And so these guys were always kind of linked in my brain, Suter and Parise, and now they get bought out on the same exact day together. It's like, did it say in their contracts, like, these guys are together? Who knows? But it's weird. We grew up, you know, Zach Parise he shares our last name. And we've always been a big fan of his and Ryan Suter. So he's probably one of the better defensemen to ever play for Team USA, and both of those guys representing USA proudly. So it'll be interesting to see where they go. Are they going to sign identical contracts again with the team? Who knows?
I would say Ryan Suter is a top five defenseman of the last 10 years. He never quite won the Norris Trophy, but he came close. He was always a little overshadowed by guys like Duncan Keith, Erik Karlsson, Drew Doughty. I would say we're all just a little bit better. But Ryan Suter was good, man. He led the league in ice time for like five straight years. Coming over from Nashville, he was a first-round pick in the 2003 draft, the greatest draft ever, and so was Parise. And Parise was the type of player – and he's not done, I don't think. But he was the type of player who – played hockey in a way that not every single person could. He never really like razzle dazzled in terms of the way he scored his goals. He always just parked his butt right in front of the net and just jammed away at pucks as hard as he could. It's hard to think of anyone who worked harder than him on the ice when he was taking his shift. I mean, for a winger to play like that and not be so dedicated to like making plays to where he made plays naturally. But I think Mike Rupp on NHL Network one time called him a superstar grinder. I think that's the perfect way to describe him. Cause when you look at his career numbers and see that he has close to 400 goals, he's closing in on 1,000 points and he's played 1,100 games or whatever it is now. That sounds like a superstar, right? Cause he was. You know, he came third in scoring one year, multiple 80-point seasons. I think he had one 90-point season. But when you watch the film, it looks like the same kind of goals that, like, Brian Bickle would have scored. You know, very rarely did he ever, like, McDavid the puck or anything like that. And it was just amazing to watch for all those years. And, you know, his time spent with the New Jersey Devils is the direct reason I'm a fan of the Devils to this day. And that's where he was, like, I would say a superstar. And then his first couple years with the Wild were interesting. I would say he was a superstar there for the first 2 years, a couple 30-goal seasons. It's sad, but hopefully they get to go to another team. The Wild became cup contenders the day they signed them. They never won the cup, but just because you never won the cup doesn't mean you weren't ever a cup contender. There were a couple years there. Lots of teams. The Sharks are an example of a cup contender that never won it. The Blues were for a while. The Capitals were for a while that just never got it done. Even the Lightning. How many times before 2020 did people say the Lightning were just that team that couldn't get over the hump? So Parise and Suter, they changed the Wild's franchise forever. But now that they're both getting kind of old, that 03 draft class, man, they're getting old. Ryan Suter, Zach Parise, Nathan Horton's already gone. Marc-Andre Fleury's only got a couple years left. Eric Staal is a free agent. Corey Perry is another free agent. Getzlaff is still Getzlaff. But that class, man, it's getting up there.
Yeah. Do you know how much they were making on their current contract?
It was 7.7 something. That, and another thing, those contracts basically called the 2013 lockout. A lot of people dislike Parisi and Suter for that reason. It's not their fault. If someone offered you $90 million over a 13-year span, wouldn't you take it?
They were like some of the last players to get those big deals.
They were the last players to get it. Like I said, they literally – they were the like tipping point of the 03 or 13 lockout. Because if they never signed those deals, chances are the league doesn't hold in October of that following fall. It was 2012, and then they couldn't reach a deal for a new collective bargaining agreement because of the escrow and the contracts. And ever since that day, no player has signed a deal worth more. You can now only sign an 8-year deal with your team or a 7-year deal with another team in free agency. And it's all because of Parisi and Suter. So if there are a lot of people that are annoyed with them based on those contracts and what happened and missing hockey in 2012, but you know, both of them have had very good careers so far. I think they're both just short of being Hall of Famers. Parisi would really have to go on like a run. I think he has the best chance of the two, just because if he were to have like two or three more 70-point seasons, he might reach 1,000. And if he adds a cup, then he's got a cup, 1,000 points, like silver medal. But I mean, it's been a good time with the Wild for them for sure. The fact that he played with the Wild more than the Devils is a little strange.
Yeah, he's now 36 years old. It'll be interesting to see where he signs if he chooses not to retire. The thing I'm interested in is now, if you look at the Minnesota Wild's, you know, cap hit, between those two players, this year it's going to hit them, this buyout's going to hit them 4.7 mil. Next year it's going to hit their cap 12.7. The year after that and the following year, so 24 season and 25 season, it's going to hit them 14.7 mil. And then in 26 and 27, 1.6 mil, both of those years. That's a lot of buyout cap hit. And I think it probably would have been better off for them to just finish out their contract, because are there guys in the lineup like really doing that much harm? So the buyout to me was a little bit surprising, especially when you're looking at like now, okay, the next 2 years after next year, it's going to hit your cap $14 million. It'll be interesting to see how they work around that. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think next year it's not going to hit them as hard. I think they're going to try and get Eichel.
No, it's only 4.7 next year, and they have the cap space. They have a lot of cap space. You know, some of their best players are on entry-level deals.
They are going to make a trade offer for Jack Eichel.
Yeah, it would be a good fit. But then what about when you have to hit – you're literally going to hit a $10 million, like, just out of nowhere for this buyout.
Yeah, isn't it 2 years where it's 10 mil?
No, it's 1 year at 4.7 and then 2 years at – or 1 year at 12 and then 2 years at 14.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's crazy. Like, buyouts in the NHL are just not worth it to me unless the guy's got 1 or 2 years left and they're not making that much money. So I think it was a crazy decision to buy them out. But obviously they looked at all their options. But
it's weird to me, though, that Duncan Keith was traded to Edmonton the day before. Like, Edmonton could have had Suter, who's better.
And probably given up
less. Suter's better than Keith right now.
I agree. And probably given up less, because, like, why would the Minnesota Wild prefer to buy someone out than trade them?
Yeah, even if they got, like, a seventh for Suter.
Yeah. Like, this cap hit is going to bite them in the ass in 3 or 4 years. You mark my words. Because they're going to be a good team. And at the rate Kirill Kaprizov is going, this dude's going to want to get paid.
Yeah, if he stays with them, though. Apparently, the negotiations with his new contract are messy.
I've never even seen it. If you go to capfriendly.com, I've never even seen this next to someone's name. It says something about this player has not incurred the necessary amount of professional seasons required for a Group 2 RFA status. They are ineligible for an offer sheet. And then,
that's probably because Kaprizov's rookie season was like, what was it, 50 games for him coming over from Russia?
I don't know. I'd have to go. It's literally like directing me into the collective bargaining agreement if I want to like learn more about it. I don't know. I've never seen that before. I don't even know how much he makes. And I don't know what the term is, but.
Yeah. I mean, like we said about the Lightning in the first period, the Minnesota Wild are probably one of the more interesting teams that we're going to be covering this summer because they're of all the stuff that's happened with the roster and buying out Parisi and Suter, and they got good players, Joel Eriksson-Ek, Kaprizov, Fiala. That's like a nice little core to start building around for the Wild. So do you have any like thoughts or predictions on where Parisi and Suter end up? Do you think they're going to separate?
I don't know, honestly. Like I think
someone asked Zach yesterday. He said it's a possibility, and he also said he's got more hockey to play. So I don't think he's going to retire.
That's good, because I think when he's healthy, there is a spot in a lot of lineups for him and Suter. So,
well, Suter especially on borderline.
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on the term and what they're willing to take money-wise. I really wouldn't give Zach Parise more than like 2.5 mil, three mil, maybe less.
He might seem like a Corey Perry type deal, but he's effective in the playoffs.
I think when healthy and given a good lineup, you know, depending on if you give him second unit power play time, I think he could be effective even in the regular season. So,
yeah, well, effective, sure, but in the playoffs, he almost looks like old Zach sometimes. Yeah.
And Santiago
player in that game 7 against the Golden Knights.
Oh yeah, and Santiago said about the Keith trade. We already talked about that a little bit earlier, but just to reiterate, yeah, it's definitely a weird trade. He said, "Smells of something improper," and I agree, because the Oilers, like, what a terrible trade for them. Good for the Blackhawks, terrible for the Oilers.
Yeah, I honestly just can't believe that they did that.
Yeah,
it's been a weird week. We talked about the Vegas Golden Knights and their goalies. They're probably going to look to trade one of Marc-Andre Fleury or Robin Lehner, one of the two. We mentioned it already, but I'd like to dive a little bit deeper. The Seattle Kraken are expected to receive their expansion lists, their protected lists, which thus leads to the exposed lists for every team in the National Hockey League by Saturday. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm very excited to if these lists are going to go public. I kind of have my predictions for a lot of team of who's going to be protected and who's not. And I think I'd be pretty accurate with majority of the players at least. But it'll be interesting. I'm actually going to pull up Colorado because I don't know. You said that you think they're going to go the 8-skater route and 1 goalie. I don't know if I can back that. I don't think any team will do that.
I do. Some teams value that fourth defenseman that their name might not pop out at you more than you think.
I know, but if you look at the Colorado D, you got Sam Girard, Devon Taves. Oh, Cale Makar is a restricted free agent. But see, that's
another. They have to protect Makar, I learned.
They have to protect Makar,
yes.
Okay, yeah, that makes things a little. I don't know.
So someone like Ryan Graves, the forward, might be exposed. And that's probably who Seattle would take. I would think he's a good player. Seattle,
yeah, that would be their only option because Bowen Byram is entry-level protected.
Yeah.
It's all a matter of, you know, do you let a guy like that go?
If you're Colorado, you almost have to. I'd rather keep the D.
No, because there's too many forwards you got to keep.
Yeah, but if you're so – if you're so rich in that department, it's almost worth it.
We'll see. They do have a unrestricted free agent in their captain, Gabriel Landeskog.
That's going to get messy.
It is.
It's going to get real messy because they know they got to pay Nate in a year.
Mm-hmm. But if I don't even see – is Gabe worth a 9.25 mil, which is what Mikko Rantanen's making? I'm going to say no.
No.
I wouldn't – I mean, maybe Gabe goes somewhere else and they give Nate the C. Who knows?
Yeah, I would think that's a possibility, a distinct possibility.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to see these lists that Seattle gets. I'll be all over it. Saturday's going to be a big day. I'm excited to see – I'm probably going to spend most of my morning dealing with those protection lists and screaming about who the Devils protected. Do you think the Bruins are going to go 7-3-1?
Yeah, I could actually tell you my – Bruins prediction right now if you want to hear it.
But for the protected list?
Yeah, but I actually also – I don't know the rules. Like, do they protect David Krejci even though he's an unrestricted free agent?
No.
That was my guess.
Actually, so, maybe.
Wouldn't that be the same as Cale Makar, but he's restricted?
But Cale Makar is a restricted. They have his rights. But the Bruins have the right – to sign Krejci for 8 years.
8 years. So do you have to protect him?
Yeah, maybe. Actually, that's a good question.
Because then what's stopping Don Sweeney, general manager of the Bruins, from calling Krejci's agent and being like, hey, Krejci, we want to re-sign you. We're going to wait till after July 21st. Don't sign with Vegas. We got a contract for you waiting. We're not going to protect you, though.
You mean Seattle?
Or Seattle, yeah, I'm sorry. Like, so it gets a little hairy. I don't know. But definitely the seven.
Seattle selects them because they want to pay him for 8 years, which would be dumb.
But can you select a player from the Bruins who's a free agent?
Yeah, and because you have his rights.
Wouldn't that just be signing him?
No, because you would be expansion drafting his rights. Do you get what I'm saying? If you have
the rights, so you're saying the Bruins would have to protect him?
I think. I'm not positive.
Okay, well, if that's the case, they protect Patrice Bergeron, David Pastrnak, Brad Marchand, Charlie Coyle, David Krejci, Craig Smith,
and Jake DeBrusque.
And Taylor Hall. If they have to protect Krejci.
Yeah, I don't, if that's where it gets hairy. I don't know.
Yeah, because I would say Taylor Hall. I think Taylor Hall will re-sign.
Yeah, it's gonna actually, your prediction's probably wrong. I don't know about the Krejci Hall thing now.
Exactly. So if that's the way it works, then that's the list. If you don't protect those guys, then yeah, you go Jake DeBrusque and Trent Frederick because they just signed him.
Yeah.
And then obviously, like, it's a lock that it's McAvoy, Carlo, and Grizzlick.
For sure. I would say that the Hawks list is pretty chalk, right? Pretty chalky. Kane, Taves, DeBrincat, Kubalik, Strom. They won't need to protect Doc. They might go 4-3-1. Or they might go 4-4-1. Protect Murphy. No, I don't even – dude, the Hawks list is hard.
Taves, Kane, DeBrincat.
Kubalik.
Kubalik. Dylan Strome.
Yeah.
How many is that?
That's five. Pia Suter.
Pia Suter is an RFA. So, yeah, they would have to protect him. Yes, I'll say him.
David Kampf, probably. I would say you leave Gaudette and Hagel exposed.
What about Henrik Borgstrom?
No. He's on an entry level deal, no?
No.
He's not. Yeah, no. He's not. I'm looking at cap friendly as well. Yeah.
That's an interesting one. I don't know.
It'll be better when we actually have the lists in front of us and we can make those predictions instead because we won't sound like complete dummies.
Yeah. One last thing about the Bruins before I shut up about them. Kevin Miller announced his retirement today, and it's definitely a hole to fill because when this dude is healthy, he's a force out there, and it's going to suck not seeing him. I'm kind of happy if he's going to be done playing hockey with the Bruins, he's done playing hockey because I would hate to see him in another team. I would hate playing against him. He's developed a friendship and a brotherhood with Brad Marchand. As you know, he started his own company with him. It's called Marchand Milko, and those guys are like, I've never seen a closer duo off the ice of hockey players. Like, these guys are best friends. And so I do think Kevin Miller might stick around in the organization. He's not going to step away from hockey completely. So it'll be interesting to see, and congrats on a career to him. It just sucks the way it had to end with all these injuries.
Absolutely. I really like Kevin Miller. I just hope that for the rest of his life, he's able to be happy and healthy because the injuries did start to pile up there at the end. So thinking of him, and congrats to him on his retirement. And one more time, I'll mention to Zach Parise, like, he'll always be my favorite player, I think. And hopefully he lands with a team that has a chance to win the Stanley Cup, because I would love to see him win it.
Yeah.
And before we head out, what are you doing tomorrow at 2 o'clock?
Tomorrow at 2 o'clock, I will be sitting in this chair talking about the wonderful, and I mean wonderful, All-Star break that was so fun to watch. Talking baseball, talking Cubs, talking White Sox, Shohei Ohtani, Vlad Guerrero Jr., Chris Bryant, Lance Lynn, all these guys, Liam Hendricks, they all had a great All-Star weekend. One of them was.
Okay. Yeah, with an asterisk. Yeah. We'll be more into that tomorrow. I want people watching right now who like baseball to know that if you're a fan of Shohei Ohtani, tomorrow's the show for you, because I'm going to get real serious about Shohei Ohtani right when we kick off the show tomorrow. So Crosstown Crosstalk tomorrow, 2 p.m. Central, or on Apple, Spotify at your leisure needs. For this show, you can listen after if you weren't able to catch the whole thing. The Tampa Bay Lightning are the Stanley Cup champions. Congrats to them. It's going to be a big summer. And next week, the Seattle Kraken show, the Seattle Kraken edition of Bar Down Blackhawk Talk. We might call it Bar Down Kraken Talk next week. That sounds kind of dirty, though.
Yeah, who knows?
It's Bar Down Kraken Talk could be a bunch of different types of shows. It's just a fact.
I mean, I guess, yeah.
And if you're not following at Joey Parisi on Twitter, I don't know what's wrong with you. Because this kid's tweets, they make no sense. They're just randomly out of nowhere. Like, oh, I'm watching the hot dog eating contest today, so I'm going to write something in all capital letters and just assume that people know what I'm talking about. It's a wild ride following Joey on Twitter. You have to do it.
Yeah, look, I tweet about the home run derby. I tweet about the All-Star game. Andre Vasilevsky, we talked about that.
Those events were like a week apart.
And Joey Chestnut?
That was like a week before that.
Yeah. I mean, there's just great content on here. You never know what you're going
to
get.
Exactly. That's why I strongly encourage all these people to at Joey Parisi right now. You could get me at Vinny Parisi for more consistent tweeting, and you'll know what I'm talking about for the most part. But let's get Joey to 1,000 followers. Let's do it.
1,000. I'm trying to break 200.
Yeah, well, that's a small step. I reach for the stars. We're a superstar TV show.
Yeah.
Superstar podcast. So I don't reach for minimal numbers. I reach for the stars. To the moon.
Yep. I'll be at the White Sox game again. We go to a lot of White Sox games, but I'll be there Friday rooting on the White Sox against the Houston Astros, and I'll be tweeting about it. I'm sure I always drop tweets. When I'm doing shit, I drop tweets. That's what I do.
Yeah, absolutely. So for Joey, I'm Vinny. Thank you for listening.